This is Wafa Al-Daily interviewing Mrs. Elisa Estella McDin. We are in Gainsborough Library. Today is April 6th, 2009. So I'm glad you've been here for our interview. And if you don't mind, just to tell us where and when you were born.
I was born in Rockamount, Virginia, April 28th, 1926.
For how long have you lived in Roanoke? What streets and neighborhoods did you live in?
Okay, I've been in Roanoke since 1940. Lived here since 1940. And came here in the Southwest area, in the Hurt Park area. And I lived on Norfolk Avenue in Southwest. From there, I went to Gilmer Avenue Northwest. And from there to my present location on Mercer Avenue Northwest.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about your parents and brothers and sisters.
Okay, and do you have any moved here with my parents. My father was a minister and was called to pastor the Jerusalem Baptist Church. So therefore, we had to move with him. And my mother opened up kindergarten, which was the first in that area, in a building that belonged to the church, and they called it the Baraka House. And it was established by a group of men of the Jerusalem Baptist Church and a few people in the community who wanted a place where they could meet.
Yeah.
And they established that and built a little brick building right on the lot of Jerusalem Baptist Church. And upon moving here, and my mother was a beautician when we came here and worked in the school system out of Richmond. But when we came here, she was looking for something to do, so she opened up a kindergarten.
Yeah.
She opened up a kindergarten, her own kindergarten. It was called Hunter's Kindergarten. And that was in existence in that building, as I told you, the Baraka House, for years. My father was the pastor of that church, the Jerusalem Baptist Church. I had two brothers. One was named Clarence, and the other one was named Glenn. And I happened to be their only sister, and they called me Jeanette, which was my middle name.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, we had no extended families living close by, so it was just mom, dad, two brothers, and a sister.
Yeah, it means after that you have extended families living there afterwards. Yeah. Please describe your house for us.
Which house? You're talking about the one there, the first one?
Yeah.
That was a two-story building with eight rooms, one bath. A little back porch, an incomplete basement, with a nice front porch.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not our home per se. It was owned by the church that provided living facilities for the pastor and his family.
Okay.
So it was weatherboard. And later on, I remember correct, they did put siding on it, I think.
Mm-hmm. So did you have a garden over there?
We didn't have a garden there. Three blocks away, four blocks away, that was an empty land, and Dad had a little garden up there. And that was between 12 and a half Street and 13th Street, right off of Jackson Avenue, which ran right up to the railroad. And he had his little garden up there, and sometimes we had to go with him. And it was fun to see us pushing a tiller up the street to the garden so we could turn it over, you know, and plant. But yes, we did have one.
That's great. So, what kind of activities did you participate in?
At that time, I guess, basically there was church and whatever school activities, you were in. At that time, I was in the school choir. Participate in a church youth choir, church ushers. And I guess at that time that was basically all that you did, wasn't much to do at that time. So not too many activities. Movies once in a while, get together as friends, maybe. We would go to close by where you could be in hollering distance from home and maybe sit down and talk with them or play, or we'd go to each other's yards and play and things like that. But we didn't have much else to do.
So, if you don't mind, let's talk about your school life. And for instance, where did you attend
Okay,
school?
I never went to elementary school here in Roanoke. We moved here, as I told you, in 1940, and I was in high school. So I went to Addison High School, and that was in the old Addison building that is now the Roanoke City Schools Administration Building. But we went to high school there. And it was quite a distance. We had no transportation for the kids in Southwest Roanoke.
So did
We
you
had
used
to
to
walk.
walk?
We had to walk to school every morning. If it was real bad, real cold, my dad would take us. But it had to be bad because he said you all needed to walk. So we walked. And as we got a little older, and there was a one young man in our group who I guess it was probably maybe the senior year, my senior year, had his driver's license, and my dad had taken a liking to him because he seemed to have been a nice young man. And some days he would let him drive us to school. Oh, that was the top of the day if we got to go to school in a car and someone else drove it other than dad. But Addison to me was really a school of schools. Dedicated teachers, segregated schools, teachers who really wanted to make sure that we excelled as the other races did, I'll put it that way. Strict. You almost had mom and dad at school, especially before I came to Roanoke. If you misbehave in school, the message was home when you got there, and mom was standing at the door with a switch or a bell. Of course, and I came to Roanoke in high school, you didn't have quite that bad of discipline. But anyway, there was a communication of discipline between home and school. So schooling to me was an activity. It was enjoyable because you got to be with your friends and all, which you didn't get to do much of. And I only went to school in Roanoke City for 3 years. So my schooling time here was, limited. But it wasn't an enjoyable one. And then after I finished high school, I went off to college. And I started off at Bennett College in North Carolina, and I went for 2 years. I guess I would have stayed, but one day I heard a comment made by a teacher, not to me, but just in talking, and I can't remember right now whether it was in a classroom or whatnot, but the statement was made somewhat to the effect that this was a college that was set for prestigious people, people of stature and whatnot. And that disturbed me. don't know why, but I didn't consider myself being, I guess, of that stature. Mm-hmm. But so that year, I asked my parents to let me change schools. And they didn't want me to, but I told them I didn't think I could progress that because I didn't like that. Once you hear a statement, that gets into you and things begin to pull apart.
Yeah.
So they finally consented for me to move. So I went to Morgan State University in Baltimore, Maryland. And I completed my 4 years there. And from that on, then I got my first job. We'll talk about education of the rest of the family members since I'm on that segment.
Yeah.
And my two brothers did attend college. My older brother, which is Clarence, who is now deceased, he went to Shaw University in North Carolina, and he graduated from Shaw. And he received his master's from UVA.
That's great.
My brother, Glenn, went to Howard University. Funny story about Glenn. He was in his, I don't remember now whether it was junior or senior year, but he was taking calculus. And he was a person that always had to be at the top of everything, you know, excel. And he made, believe it or not, a C in calculus. And he couldn't take it. So at the end of the year, he left.
That affected him.
Left college.
Yeah.
And he went to New York. And I guess I need to back up. We don't usually separate it, but I'll back up to tell you. When he went to New York, he lived with a birth brother. Glenn is not my birth brother. Mm-hmm. Glenn is my adopted brother. He was a first cousin, my mother's sister's child who died when he was a baby. And we brought him to live with us 3 days before he was a year old. And we made no differences. He was brother. And he wanted it that way. But he went, rather than to come back to Roanoke, he went to New York. He had an older brother, birth brother, that lived there. And he lived with him for a while. And from there, he migrated to Los Angeles and went to school and finished there. I don't know the school. And then he went to work for Hughes Aircraft. And he personally knew Howard Hughes. And he just worked up in that company until he became the person in the corporate that had to do with wage, salaries, and negotiations. Mm-hmm. So my older brother, Clarence, came back to teach in Roanoke. I was teaching in Roanoke, and it ended up, it's hard, that when schools were integrated, I went doing that, it was the beginning years, to Lee Jr. downtown, and from there I was one of the first group of teachers that went to Madison Junior High when they built it. We moved over. And my brother came along and happened to be one of my assistant principals. And so he was there for a while, and when he left there, he went to Winchester and was the assistant principal of Handler High School in Winchester. So basically, that's part of our family education. Since then, I never did get another degree, but I've always did extended studies, not concentrating, but I did extended studies at UVA. I did extended studies at Virginia Tech. Well, back up. I did do extended studies at Radford in order to be certified in doing culinary arts, mm-hmm. which then was called home economics, but it was on the job level, you know, training them for the job. We didn't call it culinary arts then, but it turned out to be that. So then I did get certified in that.
That's great. Yeah. So describe your home life.
Oh, well, I gave you part of that anyway. Yeah, but home was somewhat of, excuse me, that time close to that. You didn't do a lot of things. You did your homework, you did your chores, and then we played a lot of games at home. Wasn't much telephone then, no. Mm-hmm. We had a refrigerator. We had the comforts of home that we could have at that time in the 30s and 40s. One thing about that I can remember that stands out, and I tell to my kids and my great-grandkids about that now, and I do have that old TV in my attic. We were one of the first to get television when it came.
Color or draw?
And I can remember I don't know the name of the place, but it was a building on 13th Street in Southwest between Patterson Avenue and Chapman. And my dad got us a television, and oh Lord, we thought we were in heaven. And then some of our friends would come to our house and sit down and look at television with us, you know. And sitting on the porch in the evening was not a thing that we did as a family. We may sit there and chat, or I was showing you a picture of the kids in the neighborhood. We might chat back and forth, families across the street. But that was more of the things that we did. Chores were things that you had to do. You had to do the lawn. You had to wash the dishes. You had to clean up. You had whatever it was. Everybody had an assignment, and a lot of times our chores would reverse. You know, the boys had to learn, had to do some washing of the dishes and that thing. So I hated cleaning up, and I always had the inclination of going into teaching home economics anyway. So I could, somewhat, my mom and I somewhat had a pack. I would do the cooking and mom would do the cleaning up. So that took care of that. Uh-huh. So that was, you know, things that we did. And I noticed after I got married, I went to from college and I was working. And as far as I know, my husband, they migrated here from Chatham, Virginia, I think. That was a combination of two little towns, at Chatham and Gretna. Sometimes they would say Gretna, sometimes they would say Chatham, but they came here from that area. And I married September 1949. And I came back to Roanoke pretty much after that. My husband did serve in the service. And that was all before I married him. So I don't know that much about that. But he and I had the four children that we listed in this document together. And we had a little business along with his father up on Salem Avenue, right off the corner between 12th Street and 12 and a half Street. And it was a little long building, and then his dad had a little grocery store. And then that was a little room off to the side. So my husband and I opened up a record shop, mm-hmm. and we sold records and music, little music at that time. And those were the things that we did. And then on the side, my husband had gone to Banneker's Radio Institute in North Carolina and graduated from that so he could do fixed radios, TVs, and things like that. So that was stuff he did at home. We're not in a business setting. We didn't do it at home, so therefore we didn't get a contract. He didn't get a... license. We didn't have to do that because we did that at home on the side, you know. But I think a lot of my family, I'm talking about my family with my husband Eugene, I consider us to have been a happy family. We did things together. We did not have much money, but we enjoyed being together with the family. And I don't go to the movies much now anyway. I didn't go to the movies then during that. And they said, well, why didn't you go? I said, because my family was all the movie we needed. With those four kids and the things they did and the antics they did and that type of stuff, it was fun for us, so we enjoyed each other, you know, like late in the evenings and when we had time. Another thing that I think was good for us, we really celebrated holidays and we celebrated birthdays. And at that time, we did take a family vacation, very little money. And surprising you talking about in that, I was just talking about that to one of the kids last week, one of the grandkids it was. Every year we are a sports family. And every year we would get save a little bit so that we could go to a national baseball park every year. And we would take the kids, we'd pack them up in the car. We'd pack the cooler with food. I would make chicken and potato salad, pies and cakes and stuff, and pack it up and go. And we would get us a hotel with an adjoining room. The kids were in one room and we were in the other room. And therefore, we didn't have to buy much food because we packed it up and carried it. And we would go for a weekend and come back. And that's probably why Mac went into baseball. And I'm sure he told you about it, his beginning years, because that was the family vacation. We would go to a different baseball park every year. And we come back and we talk about it. And then I tell them, I says, now, when you go to school, back in those days when you went to school, the very first days of school, you would tell about what you did over the summer. And I said, be sure to tell them what you did, because I thought we had a good time. Sometimes they would say yes, and sometimes they'd say no. But yet and still, they all, I think, enjoyed it. Then, during all of that time and that, I got involved in the church work. And, of course, I took music lessons. So, therefore, I became, sooner or later, the church pianist. And I played for all of them. And then from that, I came the youth pianist and for the youth choir and became the director for the youth choir. And all of that was before I left to go to college. And when I came back, I went back into that setting and played again and was youth director, pianist for 25 years after I came back, and then became the director and someone else was the pianist. But it was something that I enjoyed and somewhat helped develop a youth department for that church. Mm-hmm. And I told the new pastor we have now, one of the diggers that they have made a digging lately, I says, if you hear me sometimes giving advent, go ahead, Glenn. And he's singing. And I just get filled up because I started Glenn off as a little boy, as one of the first youth diggers in our church. And he and William Reynolds, and no one knows him by William, we call him Pee Wee. Pee Wee had a deformity, but he was a heart. I just loved him. And I had those two boys, and they were my regular youth diggers until we got to get more and more come up, and I would get some more. And I don't know, we had a set of Franklin boys, and I don't know, I just took to them. And, you know, that was something that we did. And then all of that basically was done after I had gone off for my first job, as I told you. That first job was a home demonstration agent, we called it then. And that's when you heard about the 4-H clubs and that. Well, that's spun off from that. And that was a government job out of the Agriculture Department for the United States. Mm-hmm. And mine was first one, I told you, in Louisa. And I did that until I came back in the 50s and got married. And then after I had the kids, my first job was working with North Carolina Mutual, after I came back, because I couldn't get right into the school system or something of that nature. So I worked there for several years until I got on at Harrison Elementary School. And I don't know how many teachers before me. I know one or two. But anyway, it was the only home economics class in elementary school in the state of Virginia. Mm-hmm. So to keep it going, then they came to me and said, there must be a curriculum. So that was one of the hardest things I guess I had to do. But anyway, I had to write the curriculum for that in order to keep it going because it was being state recognized and condoned then. So then I wrote the curriculum for that. And I stayed there for years until that became an opportunity to go to the integrated schools. And I went to, as I told you, from Lee Junior, from there to Madison. So I'm moving from elementary to middle school. And I retired in 1987 from high school, William Fleming High School, teaching culinary arts. We did a lot of things during that time. But after that and teaching school and after I retired, I couldn't stay at home. So I did a lot of volunteering in the school system. And then I began to get into the love of my life now, which is neighborhood and community work. The Melrose Rugby Neighborhood Forum, which I am now the president of, but when it was founded, I was co-president with Walter Pfizer. And he's gone on. But we have been in existence for a number of years. And from that's how I got into the national. Going with the director of neighborhood services to a national conference. The first one I attended, I wasn't the first, but the first one that I participated was in Pasadena, California. I was a workshop presenter, mm-hmm. being coerced by my director of neighborhood services for Roanoke. She says, you've got a lot to offer. You've come up with your neighborhood organization, building it from the ground up. And I never will forget. My workshop was building a neighborhood from the ground up, block by block. And the next year she says, why don't you run for the board of directors? I says, no way, no way. Not to my knowing, she had submitted my name. And then she came back and told me, I said, you should not have done that. But you're voted on by the entire membership, so there's no guarantee you're going to get on it anyway. Mm-hmm. So the first year I didn't. But after attending, when I went to the next one, I began to get real interested in it. I came back and began to see where it could be of great use for here in the city of Roanoke. So I ran on my own. I made it. And as of today, I've been on that National Board of Directors for Neighborhoods USA for 12 years.
That's great.
Actually, a 13th year that is not in the bylaws. And how I got that 13th year, at that time, our voting was done by mailing ballots to the entire membership, the ballots coming back to a committee, and you counting them. Committees being made of people all over the state, you can't get together and count them. So when I became chairman of the Board of Development, the worst year I had was mailing 1,400 ballots. Getting not all of them back. I got about 500 and some back, counting those. And I said, that's got to be a better way. So my goal then was to begin to work on seeing why we couldn't vote at the conference. So your conference terms are three-year terms. You can serve three-year terms consecutively. Then you come off 1 year, and then you could go back. Well, when my 3 years was up, that board of directors made a motion at the end of that conference that year to leave me on as a non-voting member, but a member of the board with the task of working on voting at the conference and hoping that within that 1 year I could get it set up. Lo and behold, I did. And the first one we voted on was in Kansas City, Missouri. And it was funny to me because I never had seen voting where you had to do the little punch card. And that was a learning experience for me. But that was the first one. And that turned out well. Then my job is to deal with those cities, to deal with that registration department, trying to see how I can get it together. So that worked. The next year, it was done in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And I like to tell it, they had the cha-ching, where you put it in and pull the lever, you know, and it goes and it clears it out of the way. And my thing was, it's got to still be a better way. So then I began to think about, and talking with others, how can we do this electronically? I'm an illiterate person when it comes to computers and whatnot. I tell everyone, and I don't shun it, but I'm getting pretty good at it right now. But anyway, that was not one of my things. So there was a young man on my committee that I had talked with it about. I says, there should be a way. So then Richard Whipple, who was chairman of the Public Affairs Committee, says, we had a website. He says, we're going to look into it. So we got together. And then that year, which was last year, the conference was held in Hampton, Virginia. Mm-hmm. And they had this gorgeous new convention center that had a business center right as you walked in. So we talked with them, and I talked with their technicians from their planning committee, and they said, oh, yes, we think we can get it set up. So working with that and working with them, we were able to do our first electronic voting at the conference using our computers, piggybacking off of our website. So now it is now set up wherein it's called a Survey Monkey. Yeah. We are able to do our own. And I want to say thank you, because October will be my last meeting. I am retiring. So to me, I've done that much that I've set out to do nationally.
Yeah.
During all of this time, there were two other states that had their own state conference. And I wondered, why are there none on these? One was in Florida and one was in California. But they had more than one person on the board. Florida had three at that time. California had two. Not the same cities, but the state. And I finally said, if they can do it, little old me can do it too. So I had a friend in Richmond, Selena Cuffy Glenn, who attended the conference all the time, and being from Richmond, we kind of bonded. And I told her what I wanted to do. And I says, will you help me? She says, I don't see why I can't. So that next year, when we went to the national conference, there were a lot of people from Richmond, and I made an announcement that I want to meet with all of the people from Virginia in a certain spot. And we said, at that time, the meeting was just to get us together, and I wanted to take a picture. And while I was taking that picture, just looking at that crowd there, maybe 30 or 40, could have been more, something just hit and says, why can't you have one in the state of Virginia? And I said to that group, I said, you know what, we all could probably get together and do something. And they said, you do it, we'll come. You do it, we'll come. No one says, I'll help you, but you do it, we'll come. So I talked to Selena, and she said, then she was, I don't know the exact title, but she was director of neighborhood services and something in the city of Richmond, and she was in the administrative section. So we talked about it, and she says, let's try doing something and doing it small. We can do it. I says, okay, we'll get together. She went back and talked to some of her people, and they said, well, where are you planning to have it? What are you planning to do? She said, we haven't gotten that far yet, but she'll come up with it by the time I talk to her again. She says, but Richmond says they will give you $1,000 to start. So that was a little old small hotel up on West Broad. We went and talked to them, and they said, we know they might do so. She and her secretary, they would correlate that. And then I had at one of the national conferences, a very close friend until today in Jane City County. I told Caroline about it and one or two others, and I said, we can do it. Richmond says they're going to give us $1,000. They're going to talk with this hotel and see what they can do, and we're going to get it together. So we started the state conference right there from that, and it has grown. And this year we are having a big celebration, celebrating our 10th conference. And it's going to be held in Chesterfield. It's held every year, city to city. It's patterned and drawn up on the same principles as the national. I'm running it the same way, using that. And we have a state committee, and we travel once a month. National meet 3 times a year. We travel once a month and meet in middle of the state, usually in Charlottesville or Richmond, or we're now into Chesterfield. Then none of us have to travel so far, so we are there. All of this came about because now Melrose Rugby Neighborhood Forum, after that, and going to the national, and our people, we were meeting in Williams Memorial Baptist Church. From that, Dr. Law's office became vacant, and they let us use that. And then they finally wanted that building back. And I said to them, I'm so tired of moving from place to place, place to place. We ought to get our own place. Nobody wanted to do it. I said, but we can do it. Nobody wanted to do it. Let's do it. So I said, let's apply for the city grants, CDBG funds. Well, if you want to do it, go ahead. I says, okay, I'm going ahead. So we filled out the forms, and several of the members were with me, and we filled out the forms, and we went, put in our bid. We got turned down. Well, we asked for $45,000, so I said, well, you have time to revamp. When they turn you down, they'll have another hearing. I said, okay, we'll drop it. So we dropped it a little bit. We got turned down. The secretary of that of Melrose Rugby, I think Shirley Bethel was, I don't know if it was Mary Allen or Shirley Bethel, but I know Shirley Bethel was the one. So I'm gonna put down all the little things we do. So she made that listing. I got that list of things, and I got my grant form. We went to city council, and we said, you know, here we are over here in Northwest Roanoke. Nobody cares anything about us. We over here doing our own little thing, doing whatever we can to try to make our neighborhood a better place to live. We have been moving from place to place to meet. We want to have our own place. We have tried for a grant. I said, but you know, if we only got $30,000, we could do it. I never will forget it. David Bowers was mayor then. And I said, we had a copy, and I gave it to each one of the councilmen. I said, here is a copy of things we have already done, and we're just moving from pillar to post. I know. He said that day to Jim Ritchie, who was interim city manager, Jim, go find her the money. And less than a month time, we were called and says, hey, you're going to get that grant.
That's great.
We got the grant. We had enough money to buy the building. We bought 1730 Orange Avenue Northwest. We bought the building. We had several thousand left. There was no heat in that building or anything. They said we could use the balance of that grant because you have to use it for what you say and put some heating in there. So we did that. So then we applied to the city for one of the city grants. The most you could get there was $10,000. It wouldn't give me $10,000. It gave me $9,500. I said, okay, we'll take that. We looked at all of the renovations that needed to be done because we hadn't gotten in the building. We had to clear it out. It was a mess. So we took that and we began to talk to people and let them know what we were about. We took that $9,500, bought all the materials we needed to renovate that building. People in the community and all over the city, basically, especially in the Northwest area, volunteered. We had a volunteer plumber, electrician, plasterer. Those three belonged to my neighborhood organization, John, and then contractors. We had all of these people, and they volunteered their time, and we renovated that building that we have now. With all of that done and the way that we had to do it, we wrote the National Give Awards for various neighborhood things. So we wanted to get the Neighborhood of the Year Award. So we submitted our proposal with our pictures, and we, under the environmental section, volunteerism. And with the total, and I don't remember it, number of volunteer hours to renovate that building with pictures in progression, we won that national award. And we then dedicated our building. We had a big celebration. And it's because of the people in the neighborhood wanting to have something of their own, that we have accomplished this building. And we use it, and there's a sign in the yard that says Melrose Rugby Center, 1730 Orange Avenue. And we are talking about now, what can we do? We are getting older, and our aim now is to get younger people, and that is hard. We have some people in the 40s and 50s. They work. They can't come to the meetings. They work, but they do support us in other little things we have to do, because now that we have gotten this building to this point, we can't get grants anymore for that. We have to keep the upkeep ourselves. Now, major things like roofing and whatnot, there are grants for that. But we do apply for grant money every year. We have our signage to designate our neighborhood, which our boundaries, and you can get grants for that. But then they said, you can't. I said, yes, there's always grants. Let's go training. I learned that from NUSA. That's the Short for Neighborhoods USA. So we started putting in for grants for training. Every year we have gotten, we send members of our organization to the national conference. We send members to the state conference. We pay everything but their food. And that's what they did to me. Nobody pays my food. But anyway, that way, and therefore you get the information here now with other neighborhood organizations of the city doing the same thing. Hey, apply for training. You can go these places, see what's going on. So what we do as a backing for that grant, we have, the first one was a sweat I named, Harvesting the Fruits of Our Labor. And we get together, and everybody who went from whatever organization, they would have to come and make a report of from the workshops and things they went to and what they learned, bring it back. And we invited all the city of Roanoke, really, all neighborhood of.
Did Hurt Park join in?
Do
you know more about the Hurt Park Alliance?
Yes, yeah. A Hurt Park Alliance, they go. They go to the national conference. And Jimmy Cook is my child. I call him my child since he's born. He and my daughter, we were real, real close. We were real close. And he stayed a lot. And I keep him pushing. I keep pushing Jimmy. And he now is on my state committee, planning committee. Mm-hmm. He's been on it now with me for 4 years. And so I never have belonged to that organization because when that came about, I wasn't living in that area.
Yeah.
But I do support them. And I was in on the redevelopment and housing and TAP with that planning to do the revitalization there. I was on that committee until they got into the really getting ready to go into it. Then I got too busy. I didn't have time to go there. And I guess you want to say, well, how did you get busy? But I stay busy. But my thing is this. You just have to get out there, toot your horn for what you think you need.
Yeah.
And I still belong to Hurt Park neighborhood. I'm still a member of the church in Hurt Park neighborhood. I push whatever they are doing in Hurt Park neighborhood. I had a grandchild and a great-grandchild in Hurt Park Elementary School by special permission. And then I became a member of their treasurer for their PTA. And I'm no longer that. I'm still connected with Hurt Park Elementary School because I am their central council area rep for PTA from the city of Roanoke. So I'm still Hurt Park.
So do you have a role model there?
When you were young?
Yeah, when were you?
When you were in Addison High School, did you have any role models in the community, in your church?
Well, when you were in Hurt Park, I mean, when you were in that time at one teacher at Addison, Alta Mae Thompson, and she lived across in front of me when I lived on Gilmer Avenue, but she always expected the best out of you. And I know we got on her nerves, and you knew when you got on her nerves. She would go to that blackboard and throw her hands up and she says, "Father, I stretch my hands to thee, no other help I know." And you know, and that kind of stuck with me. In all of your frustrations, and kids can get on your nerves, that last nerve, she was calm. And that, I know I have a loud, caring voice, and I can raise my voice. But you know, I thought about that, what she said. I never used it as one of the things I would use. I have told it to a lot of kids. But to me, it helped me to deal with kids and try not to get all out of sorts. And I think the part that I developed with students came about from thinking about that. And my 4 kids in school, them coming home and in the afternoons and talk about what happened today. They gave me a lot of student language, I guess I say. And I loved it. And I used it in my classrooms whenever I could use. And they would go in there, and sometimes they would go in, they would get all bad. I said, "I'm hip today." And they would look at me, you know, whatnot. But then they accepted it, you know. And my thing today, wherever you are, if we could just, we as older people, we have got to remember times are changing. we have to change in order to live and cope with and to really bond with the younger people. That's one of my philosophies, but you must not forget, all of the basic principles of living have not changed. All that has changed is the way you tweak it and make it go. So that's my story.
So is there anything else you didn't cover and you want to share with us?
I don't know. Maybe you got a question I didn't tell you.
So thank you for participating. And
if you would like,
if you would like to go back.
Talk about how Roanoke
has changed. I was just looking at how Roanoke has changed. Sometimes I think it has, and sometimes I think we're retrogressing. I really, really do. Mm-hmm. And I'll go back under the community section and talk about how Roanoke has changed. When I first started being a part of Neighborhoods USA, Roanoke was one of the top cities. Roanoke was one of the few cities that had a neighborhood staff office in their city administration. And to see that come down now where we don't have that status hurts me. To me, that's retrogressing. We now have a neighborhood office with a one-man staffed, just got to do everything, and we don't have a director. He is a coordinator. But I must say the one we have now is doing a marvelous job, an excellent job, and to the point that he's on my state committee, and the city allows him to do that. So that means I've done something that they think well about. And I want to say that Roanoke needs to, I don't know. I really don't know. I can tell you one thing. Code enforcement is a real part of City of Roanoke that lacks a lot of implementation. There have been things implemented, but Roanoke has not implemented them. They are on the books now, but they are not enforcing them as they have been. And I'll go back and tell you, the model that they are using now is a model that two of Melrose Rugby neighborhood members brought back from one of these conferences that we got training money to do, and had the city to bring in Norfolk, then had built up a model, to bring them in, and they did workshop with it. We got all of that on the books, and it's not being implemented like it should. The other thing I want to say that I did leave out is the neighborhood by design did come about and has changed because of neighborhood organizations. And Mrs. Thornhill, who was there, then president of NNEO, and Estelle McCadden, Melrose Rugby Neighborhood, we went to Richmond and lobbied for that. And the purpose of that was to get a law on the books so that realtors or homeowners or to be homeowners could not come in a neighborhood and just throw up any model, any type of home. And they called it by neighborhood by design. So we went to Richmond and lobbied for it, and we got it. And my neighborhood was the pilot for it. So therefore, you just can't come in there and put up any type of home now. That has to be done, and it has to follow the guidelines that's on the books. And that has been one thing that has changed. And that model can be used now all over the city. It can be a citywide one.
So what are the things that you would like to be?
Mrs. Thornhill was a strong community leader.
Yeah.
One that I admire and has done wonders for that NNEO. I hate, it has hurt my heart to see her principles and her hard work to go down when they got in that bind, because that lady gave everything she had for that. And that was another person that I said, she had the drive and the go and made me want to do in my section of the city to have that drive and to go and to do things. I do remember the closing of the silk mill. And a lot of people were hurt. A lot of people lost jobs. And if you want to think about it now, that was one of the main things then that we in Roanoke can say we can relate to now.
Yeah.
Because that was a big part of it. Norfolk and Southern was a big chunk of the money here. So when you see those things go and downsize, then we have experienced economic difficulties in Roanoke for quite some time.
Any family member was affected by that?
No, not my family members. Mm-hmm. But I don't know how or what. I know what needs to be done. And I said it at award ceremony that I received, what was last year, I received the Citizen of the Year for Roanoke, and I received the SALC Martin Luther King Drum Major Award this year. I just received the American Red Cross Hero Award. And my thing, at each one of those, when I make my comments, I need help. The help I need is helping me bring the younger people together. My concentration now is if I could get every neighborhood organization in the city of Roanoke to get two or three young people, and I want the middle-aged young adults too, to bind together, and we all come together one and talk about our problem, what needs to be done, what can we do to keep the people, young people, in Roanoke. I'm raising a 15-year-old grandson. Can't wait till he gets out of Fleming High School so he can leave Roanoke.
Uh-huh.
Nothing to do, Grandma.
Yeah.
This is what he's saying. I'm trying. So I think as of last week, I may have something in the going for Melrose Rugby Neighborhood Forum. We did the Roanoke Valley Cleanup Day Saturday. I had 5 young people, 16, 14, 13, 11, and 4. And you know I took pictures and pictures of those. And I'm going to put them in the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, another young lady, well, not young, she's retired, but I call her young because she's so much younger than I am, of my neighborhood organization, said, let's capture it. And they looked so eager to want to do. And we talked to them a little bit. They are eager. So there's 5. I went home and I talked to my grandson. He is a part of CYP that comes out of St. John, you know, we're familiar with that. Mm-hmm. And he goes to the spinoff one up at Kingdom Life, which is down the street from me. And his friend, Kyrie, they are friends, and he goes to that. Then they've got this other little friend that lives right behind me. So I said to him when I came back, I said, son, you all went to CYP. You all are too old to go to that, but you all are in that leadership part, planning things. Grandma would love to see you get your 3 friends and plan to have a youth group at Melrose Neighborhood Center.
Mm-hmm.
I got 5 boys that I can start you with. And I say, you are a smart kid. You all get together and plan it. He says, Grandma, you got a good idea. So I want to think that maybe I'm on the road to success. I'm going to try it. My thing to him, hey, try it. You just might like it.
That's great. Okay. Then thank you so much for participating.
I'll give you my motto. My motto is, I'd like to live so that may the work I've done speak for me and will help somebody else along the way. Thank you.